Elon Musk. I'm not a fan of Elon Musk for very legitimate reasons. I am not a fan of the technocratic agenda of many of the people who are in charge of this country and in charge of really the world right now. Elon Musk comes out and says, you know, I support the Canadian truckers, yet he's developing technology that makes self-driving cars. I am against self-driving cars. Just because we can have the technology to do something doesn't mean that it's a good idea. Truck drivers are the number one job here in the States, basically, the most employed job, and you're going to get rid of those for self-driving people. What are you going to do? Hollow out the entire middle class of this country by doing that? The middle of America? You know, there's the stuff with the Neuralink and the brain chips and improving humanity. I just think there are too many problems with Elon Musk as a guy. He also has ties to the CCP and many investments there. You know, I love what he's doing with Twitter. I think that if he can make it a free speech platform for all, that's a great thing. And I'm not going to knock him for it. But I'm not going to be this person who comes and just stands with Elon Musk through everything because he said some funny jokes about Elizabeth Warren. It's like that. I don't really care. I care about what's actually getting done and what's happening in the future. That's what means the most to me.
I just like Elon's Twitter. Welcome to episode 148 of my podcast. I'm Michaela Peterson. This was a fun episode. I hosted Will Witt, who you might know from the PragerU videos of Will interviewing people in the street or public campuses. He's a nationwide speaker, author, and the host of Will Witt Live on PragerU, where he talks about political and cultural issues. We talked about a bunch of topics like Florida's recent Don't Say Gay bill, Elon Musk buying Twitter, Will's book tour and stunning Dutch fiance, and how he went from full-blown atheist to Christian. I hope you enjoy this episode and remember to subscribe if you feel like it. This episode was brought to you by Rabbit Air. I'm currently dying of allergies in Tennessee. I thought Nashville was great. And it is. There's music and cowboys and blonde girls in short shorts. But it's not great if you have tree allergies or are a bubble person like me. I've had bronchitis off and on basically the entire time I've been here, which is also why I've missed a few podcasts. Super fun. The only thing that's mildly helped me are these air filters. Did you know that the air indoors is up to 5 times more polluted than outside? If it weren't for things like these air filters, I would literally be dead already, which is why I use Rabbit Air. I got Rabbit Air's BioGS 2.0 and my sleep improved instantly. Rabbit Air's newest model, the A3, has a 6-stage filtration system that covers up to 1,070 square feet. The best thing about these by far though, is how beautiful they are. I think their new A3 model takes the cake. Rabbit Air is known for winning the world's most prestigious design awards, so you don't have to look like a nerd when you're using an air filter to survive. They have a perfect mix of slick design and top-notch engineering. I really couldn't ask for anything better than Rabbit Air, other than someone who could kill all the trees in Tennessee. Mine has my logo on it too. Isn't that cool? I recommend everyone get an air filter, even if you don't have allergies. You won't want to go back once you try them. Do your lungs a favor and visit rabbitair.com today. They have a 5-year warranty, free shipping and returns, and a 90-day money-back guarantee on all their products. That's RABBITAIR, like rabbit air, like a bunny, .com for some of the best air purifiers you'll find no matter where you look. I hope you enjoy this episode. Will Witt, welcome to my podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. We should have done this a long time ago, but we didn't. So now is as good a time as any, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm excited to be on. You know, we've been talking for a long time, trying to figure out things with your dad and things for podcasts and stuff. So I'm glad that finally I'm able to come on your podcast after you came on mine.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Before we get started, for anyone who isn't familiar with you and your work, can you give a brief description of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I work for PragerU. So I create video content for them, have about 700 million views on my videos, done a lot of man on the street videos, social media content. I'm also an international speaker, a national best-selling author of my book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, directed a couple short documentaries, and that's about it. Just a conservative commentator, cultural commentator. That's really what I do.
Have you ever taken my dad's personality test? Do you know how disagreeable you are?
Yes, actually. So this is funny. My fiance and I, we actually did do the personality test. And I think I was in like the 99th percentile for disagreeableness, like very disagreeable. It was like that for the aggressiveness as well on some of the higher end kind of things. So, which is strange because if you watch my videos interviewing people, I'm very nice to people. But I guess when it comes to more my personal life, then I can be very disagreeable, very stubborn.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me at all. I scored 0th percentile on politeness on that test. And then I retook it and was like, yeah. And then I scored 6th percentile. So that was a little bit better, but
saying you're not polite.
It's hard to say. So agreeableness, like it splits, your personality into 5 personality traits, openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. And agreeableness splits into politeness. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. I don't think I can remember the other one. Oh, and compassion, which I actually scored high in, so that's fine. But politeness is the one, it's kind of named badly. Politeness, if you score low in it, you're less likely to appreciate authoritative figures or authority figures. So you're less likely to trust authority, which just means I think it just means you think for yourself. But
right, no, I agree. High in that. I think I scored about the same as you. And I also scored very low in neuroticism.
Okay, that's good. That's probably why you're calm and nice to people if you're not flustered easily.
Right. No, I keep my cool in all those situations. That's how you change people's minds.
Ah, okay. So is that what you put in your book about how you influence enemies? Did you just stay calm? Just be chill?
Well, basically, I mean, if you're having a conversation with someone, you're trying to change their mind. I mean, I found the best way to do it is by asking people questions, and you can weave the facts and things into your questions. But I mean, I'm sure you've debated people, I've debated people, and you get there and you get angry or you're just trying to shout facts at someone. And it's a very bad way to actually try and change people's minds when you start letting your emotions get into it. And I'm not really the type of conservative who's like, facts don't care about your feelings and that's where we have to go. That's not really what I'm saying, but it's more like, okay, if you're going to have a good conversation with someone, then you have to be able to stay calm. You have to be able to ask questions that are not going to just tell them what to think, but have them think for themselves and say, okay, I couldn't answer this guy's question. Maybe I should do some more research on my own. Even if you don't change that person's mind right there where you are, they have to then say, okay, I don't know how to answer this guy's questions. I'm going to go home and, you know, maybe watch some videos or whatever it might be to find out.
Okay. So you're just trying to get people to think till they're stumped and they're like, wait a minute, logical fallacy somewhere here.
Yeah, basically, it's more of a stump kind of thing than like a, hey, look at this stupid liberal who I just embarrassed on this video. It's more like, I want to change this person's mind, or at least if I'm not changing this person's mind, the people who are watching might learn something or at least have a tactic that they can use to go out and talk to people.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know if I do that very much. I don't think I care enough about any like one topic, I think, to bother with it. Like, yeah, that's what you think. Okay. I don't think I enjoy debate, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not all that fun, the debating. I mean, I'll find that when I go out on the street and I get someone who's very angry with me. Like we went to this protest in Glendale the other day. It was a teachers union protest. So there were teachers and parents who were protesting the saying, we want LGBT education in our schools. And I got all these people who know me and they're coming up and saying, F you, Will, PragerU, you're the worst, and all these terrible things, calling me just homophobe. Like they wouldn't have conversation with me. A lot of them just wanted to debate me and yell at me. And like those types of conversations, it's just not fun. It's not fun to just have someone come up and already have this preconceived notion of you and then just try and dunk on you that way. And I don't want to do it back to them. I want to have good conversations. So those types of things, yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. It's not fun.
So you said they were protesting in order to have LGBTQ education in schools. Isn't it already in schools? What's the need for a protest there? Or was Glendale something else?
Yeah, I mean, especially in California, it's definitely in schools. Glendale is like a suburb in Los Angeles. There's like Burbank, Glendale, some other ones there. So it's a suburb. They have their own school board and all that. Okay. So there was all these things that came out in the Daily Caller about leaked emails between upper board members talking about conservatives are the worst and we're going to push this stuff on kids. And so then there were all these people coming after the Disney stuff saying, well, we need to support this and make sure that it doesn't get shut down in California. And so that's really what they were there for. And, you know, so much of it is just coded in the sense of, oh, this is about love. This is about acceptance. We're here to make sure that children can be whatever they want. And then you get down to it and you start looking at the books that they're pushing on people. You look at how they're telling kids not to tell their parents about it and thinking that parents always have a skewed view and are the devil. They're easily able to lie about what they're actually teaching to try and make it seem like this loving movement. When I got there, I mean, they were incredibly hateful towards me.
So you mentioned something about Disney. Can you fill me in on the details? I don't know if I'm aware of what's going on.
Yeah. So, I mean, in Florida with Disney and all the other things that Ron DeSantis has done, like he's basically done the don't say gay bill, as they call it.
So sorry, I'm going to slow you down. I have no idea how I'm not super aware of this because I really should be because I have a podcast. I haven't podcasted in a while. It's been like 3 months. I feel like I haven't been doing anything other than like computer work. What is the DeSantis don't say gay bill? Can you give me the background? Let's start with that, then go into Disney and then go from there.
Yeah, basically the Don't Say Gay bill is a bill that was signed by DeSantis that essentially says, hey, we don't want this LGBT education being taught to kids up to third grade in public school. And so now you are not allowed to teach that type of education to children up to third grade in Florida. And I think it's an amazing win. And so, but the way that the left handled it, I mean, it's not called the Don't Say Gay bill. That's not what it's really called. That's what the left has used as their moniker for it, saying, oh, in Florida, you can't say gay anymore. You can't say the word gay around kids. Otherwise, you might go to jail, like this level of exaggeration that these people have. And so that's where it really spawned from that. And then with Disney, there was Disney that was pushing the LGBT content in their movies and so and many of their other products. And so DeSantis decided to get rid of Disney's tax status as basically their own entity in the state of Florida so that now they have to pay taxes and don't have their own entity just like any other business in the state, which I think Disney ended up losing $35 billion. Okay. Yeah. So that's really what happened. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Good for that guy.
Huge.
Serious. Yeah. I don't know how anybody could argue that they should be teaching that stuff to people under third grade. That's so unreasonable as it is. You don't teach sex ed to kids under third grade, I think, right? I don't think I learned about it until fourth grade in Canada.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
I think I learned it in fifth grade.
Yeah. That seems totally reasonable. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So they were upset about Disney.
Yeah. Again, it's not even they say that it's about love and acceptance and that's what they're teaching. But when you look at the materials and you see what's in there and you see some of these videos of TikToker teachers that are coming out and saying like, oh yeah, we have this transition closet at our school and the kids can come in, change their clothes in my classroom and then don't tell your parents about it. That's what's being taught. You know, that's what's really horrible about it. It's really insidious because I mean, it's being pushed on children so much that I think DeSantis did exactly the right thing. I wish other people would do more like what DeSantis did.
Do you think he's going to stay in power in Florida?
In terms of winning the next election, or you mean going into to running for office as president?
Well, I mean, that I've heard rumors about that, but I mean, just staying in power in general, or do you think Florida's doomed like the rest of the country?
No, I think Florida's on the right path more than almost any other state, except for maybe Idaho. The lady in Idaho today who's within the government there just said that they want Idaho to be this Christian state founded on Christian values. I mean, it was very based, right? And now, but I think Governor DeSantis is doing everything right in Florida, where he's coming and saying, listen, I don't care what the left says about me. I don't care what these people on social media say about me. I don't care what the New York Times writes about me. I'm going to do what is best for my people. And that's what he's doing. And every single conservative, basically, that I know of, except for maybe like the National Review types of people, say DeSantis is just the best. Because he's doing things that conservatives haven't done since Ronald Reagan, really, and that's winning. And conservatives have really forgot how to win in basically every sense of the word.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Where are you right now? Where are you based?
I'm in LA. Yeah, I'm in LA. So definitely
okay, so
not like
Florida.
No, unfortunately. Yeah. No, it's hell on earth here.
Yeah. How do you manage to survive in California? You must feel stifled.
I do feel stifled, but it is also enjoyable with all of the people around who disagree with me. Being like the black sheep can be kind of fun. You know, it's like if people all agree with me, then I do get a little bit antsy in the sense that it's not so interesting to be around people if everyone's just talking about conservative politics all the time. But then again, as well, my quality of life would go up tremendously if I was living somewhere else. But you know, PragerU is based here in LA, so I'm kind of shoehorned in for now.
Okay, that's fair. So you mentioned a fiance. And I swear, yes, floating around Instagram, I've seen this, not to be like objective about anybody, but absolutely gorgeous girl that turns out to be your fiance that's European, like a some conservative from Europe. How did that happen? How did you snag that?
Yeah, conservative from Europe is also an anomaly in and of itself. So for me to be able to find her. So actually, she had met Dennis Prager at an event in Hungary last September. And then she did this speech in Sweden all about COVID mandates and everything like that. And she had known who I was. So she sent it to me and she said, "Hey, Will, like, I love your stuff. Can you review this speech for me?" And I said, "Sure, like, I'll review it. You're beautiful. Like, I'll look at this speech." And then I was like, "Well, I'll review the speech for you and tell you what I think, but I have to call you and tell you," trying to get her number. And she's like, "Okay, you can get my number, but you have to ask Dennis Prager for it." So I asked Dennis Prager for her number, got her number, and then basically said, "Don't ever doubt me again." And then that's how it all started from then. And so then I was able to get out to Europe and see her, and just, it's really been incredible. She's the most incredible woman I've ever met.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for you. That's so fun.
Thank you. Thank you. It was fun to take the personality test together. That was a good time.
Did you hook them together? Do you know you can loop them together? And I mean, you can do it by yourself, but to compare results.
Yeah, we did the comparison results thing. And so the thing that is so great about her and I know some people, I don't know, people disagree with this. Her and I are very, very similar. We're like the same person. And in some ways, it's like I've fallen in love with myself even more than I already could. And so her and I are very, very similar. And in many of the categories, we were quite the same. On our politics, we're basically exactly the same. We don't disagree on much. We have very similar values. And so when we did the test, we were like, wow, like even just based on this test, we're very similar. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to be similar to the person that you're with, especially if you're in a place like me or you or what she's doing, and you need someone. When you're getting so much hate all the time, you need someone who's going to be a fan of yours. I think that the person who you marry should be your number one fan, and they should really be on your side. That's what I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also agree with the somebody similar to yourself, although I think that also depends on what type of personality you have. Like, you're probably hyper conscientious. So being with someone else who's hyper conscientious is like necessary, or they're just going to torture you to death. Right. They're not going to want to go anywhere. They're not going to have any drive. They're going to be messy and you're just going to be like disgusted. So I think like if you're hyper conscientious, you have to be with someone else who's hyper conscientious. If you're extroverted, you probably should be with someone else who's extroverted, or you're going to want to talk to people and they're not going to want to. And then agreeableness is the interesting one. So because you strike me right off the bat as someone who's low in agreeableness. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do what you do. And it's really rare for a female to also be low in agreeableness. It's like more rare. It's not super rare. But even me, I said, agreeableness splits into two, and my compassion is really high. My politeness is really low. So it puts me at pretty much average, which I think is good. But for someone with your personality, I'd say finding someone similar would be super fun. Otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's very low on agreeableness as well, which hasn't caused any problems. To be honest, it's been great because we see things that are going on. Yeah. I mean, we see things going on and we both go very strong on them, which has been great. And since we don't really disagree on much, there's no like contention there where we're butting heads because we're both stubborn or anything like that. So it's all worked out really well.
How do you guys feel? Okay, I'm just going to have to get, we already talked about this online. I'm just going to have to get you both on, but we'll do that in person at some point. I'm planning on moving to Miami. So, and I'll have a studio there so we can do that. We can do that then. Where was I going with this? I'm moving to Miami because I've got these terrible tree allergies. And so it's giving me a brain fog. It's making me less productive and I cannot have that.
Allergic to anything.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
That's amazing. What is like, why? That's so unfair. Do you know how much easier your life is, Will? Like, forget about being white and male. The fact that you're not allergic to anything.
I know it's a much higher privilege.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I really do. But I have enough of my own health problems. I mean, I have gout, which is terrible.
You need the carnivore diet. Have you heard of the carnivore diet, Will?
Of course I have. Listen, I've been doing the carnivore diet in a little bit. I mean, I'm doing it somewhat. I mean, I've basically done the carnivore diet my whole life because vegetables are disgusting. But I've just been eating cheeseburgers every day for the past week. And I think it's great.
Is it with a bun?
No buns. Okay. Just a cheeseburger.
Okay. I would try that, but I'd like seriously for gout. Gout's unpleasant. My arthritis was kind of gouty. Uh-huh. So I'd drop gouty. The dairy and see what happens. Dairy was a huge, huge problem for my arthritis.
The cheese makes it taste so good though. It changes the whole thing.
You could try it for like 3 weeks, just see what happens. Yeah. And then eat a bunch of cheese and see what happens.
No, I'll try. I think at least my doctor said the number one thing is the alcohol, is to not be drinking. That causes the inflammation.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with vodka sodas. I don't think that's the problem. I think it's the dairy. You should do a test. Go dairyless for a month and eat a bunch of dairy and see what happens. Go alcoholless for a month and then have some vodka sodas and see what happens.
Right. But that means on the days that I'm not doing dairy, I just need to drink a lot every day to really test out the theory.
That could work. I'm just actually telling you this because I'm going to be putting out a hangover pill, which is going to discredit me further, which I'm prepared for. Uh-huh. So I'm really just like, alcohol's not bad. And then later I'm going to come out and be like, here's my hangover pill.
Wait, what do you mean a hangover pill? Like something you developed?
Okay. I'm going to sell you on this, but it's legit and it's not available yet. So you could go out and buy it, even though I'm not selling it yet. The herb's called dihydromyricetin, which isn't super catchy. So I'm going to rename it After Party, which is way catchier, but it's called dihydromyricetin.
That almost sounds like a drug.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was in pretty rough shape in university and I was drinking a lot and I was lying in bed one day and I was like, this is the level of hangover no human should experience. And it's 2012, someone must've come up with a hangover pill. So I started doing some research and I found dihydromyricetin and I found studies they'd done on rats. And so they take these poor rats and they pump them full of alcohol and then they do maze tests. So they'll do maze tests with sober rats and they'll do this one test where they flip the rat on its back and wait to see how long it takes to right itself. So that's another test they'll do, the maze test, and then they'll do a drowning test. So how long does a rat swim before it just gives up swimming? And they have their one group, which is just normal rats, and then they have their really drunk rats, and then they have the rats that are drunk, but they've also given dihydromyricetin. And the difference between the rats that were just drunk and had dihydromyricetin were massive. And you could just read it in the study, is they had less anxiety going through the maze. So they go through the maze quicker. They right themselves faster and they take longer to drown. And I was like, that's pretty interesting. So I started finding the compound online and I started taking it when I was like 20. And it made a massive difference to my hangovers because I used to get just brutally awful hangovers because I used to drink too much. Mm-hmm. Anyway. There's more research on it that it works weekly on GABA and you get a GABA crash after you drink. So you can get like anxiety with what the Gen Z calls it. Yeah. Sunday scary. There you go.
Yeah.
And so it works weekly on GABA, which means it's not scary like a benzodiazepine. It doesn't saturate the receptors, but it works weekly enough that it'll reduce the anxiety, but it also increases how fast you metabolize alcohol and how easily you break it down. It's this magical herb. And so I'm coming out with that. But I actually do believe that the gout thing would benefit a lot from reducing dairy. And I don't think vodka is the problem. There's like nothing in vodka.
Yeah.
There's no grain left. Like it's like ethanol.
Yeah. You see, I almost feel like the hangover is God's punishment for people doing stupid things. I almost feel like we shouldn't make a hangover pill to make people have to pay for their mistakes.
See, I like partly agree with you, but then you try the hangover pill and you're like, well, God probably also made this pill for the people who do the research. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's a way you can convince yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would definitely do the hangover pill if you developed it. Okay. I think that would be a lifesaver.
I'll send it to you. It is. I'll send it to you when it's out. Okay.
The older you get, it gets worse.
Oh yeah. I had miserable hangovers forever, but I didn't have the anxiety and now it's like brain fog too. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's a hangover cure, but it reduces it, I think, by about 80%. So if you do go out to a party or something, you're not screwed up for like, 2 days minimum.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'll definitely try it. That'll be a life changer for me because the hangovers ruin like an entire day. The entire next day is gone because of it.
And then you can't work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not doable. Okay. So you went on a book tour, right? Recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All over. How did you manage that in COVID?
Well, so the way that we did it is that we worked with Turning Point USA, first of all. And so Turning Point USA kind of sponsored the tour. And so they reached out to a lot of student groups across America and said, hey, if any of you guys want to bring Will out for an event, you can fill out this form and then we're going to kind of put them all together for a book tour. And so I was able to do most of them on campus. So I did 1 month or a month and a week of book touring. And so that was the longest I've ever been on the road. I mean, it was a really tough time, going to be honest with you. I mean, I'm sure, you know, you and your dad and everything know about the touring and what it's like. I mean, it can be there's nothing more exhausting than doing that. You know, when you got to wake up and travel and then do it all again, and you're doing interviews the whole time, selling the book, it's quite difficult. And so I did a lot of them on campus. And then I did a few private events of people who I knew who wanted to sponsor me, some in Tampa, Utah, Texas, things like that. And then on the weekends, I was doing churches. So there really was, yeah. So there really wasn't a dull moment. It was every single day for a month and a week, a new city and event.
Yeah. Kind of makes you sick of traveling, huh?
Yeah, no, I didn't travel for a month after that. I stayed home. I was like, I'm so exhausted. And it wasn't even just exhaustion. I mean, truly going on that book tour. And I think there's a degree of PTSD that comes from something like that. I don't want to try and self-diagnose myself or anything like that. But when you're at events and you're getting hundreds and hundreds of people coming up to you and loving everything you're doing, or, you know, you're getting all those dopamine hits and you're doing these huge events, and then you go home and there's not that anymore. It's a really strange feeling. I'm sure you guys can relate. It's a strange thing to have to deal with.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I first of all, I haven't done a tour like that. And so I did a bunch of the shows. I opened for a bunch of my dad's shows. And so I think it's a bit different because people were there to see him. So I didn't have... And then I also knew how exhausted I was even just doing that because of the traveling. And then with this ridiculous diet I'm on, adding that into the mix, like, not fun. I avoided, it's too late. I've already said it. Like, I avoided a lot of the interactions because I knew that's a huge amount of the draining part, right? It's exhausting talking to a lot of people, especially because people have like really intense stories. I mean, I'm sure you saw this come at you and they tell you this incredible, intense story. And it's like, it's hard emotionally. And so I think so even though I avoided that part, I was exhausted. Dad was super exhausted, but he's got like an endless supply of energy somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, it's really difficult and it's great. You get to meet so many people. I mean, I met thousands and thousands of people going on this tour, and they're just the best people. I mean, to come out and come to an event like that and come buy books and do the signing and all that. I mean, these are amazing people. It's so great to meet all them. The fact that I have any fans at all, it just blows me away every single day. And so it's great to go and do those things, but it is draining. There's nothing more exhausting until you tour.
Yeah. It's wild too. Cause you don't think about it, right? You don't think about it until you're kind of on it. And I was always shocked. I remember I bought tickets to see somebody and they got sick and I was like, oh, how could they get sick? I was like, I don't know. They're just like a person touring. They're very likely to get sick. But, I've met a couple of musicians who toured for like years and they didn't have a home. Like their life was touring and they didn't have a home. And by the time they were 30, they were just like screwed. Like one person I talked to, they were like, I almost died. Like it almost killed me. I was living on a bus and I was in an airplane and I was had a show every night. And now he's like done. Like it's rough.
Yeah. I really think it adds a level of almost depression when it's over. Because it's just so much, you're doing so much and then it's done, you're not there. And it's like, wow, what am I supposed to do now? I don't have all these people. I'm not giving a speech. I'm not selling my books. It bums you out for sure. There's a level to that.
I think my dad had that. And I was always like, you have lots too. Cause I'm like, I manage his brand. It was, that's a simple way of putting it. And so when he, whenever he stopped touring, he's like, I don't know what to do. I was like, no, we can feel like you have lots to do. We don't want to overdo it, but like you have a podcast. You could record every day if you wanted to. You have books you're writing. Like there's more than that. Like, but you, you know, you don't want to cram your schedule to death. But I mean, maybe it was just the entire social aspect and then having that cut that is
I think so. I think there's something weird that goes on in your brain. I can't tell, I can't, I'm not a neurologist or anything to say exactly what happens, but I know that there is something difficult about seeing so many people and having so many people be fans of what you're doing to then go to not having that and to just be at home in your apartment with your dog watching YouTube and being like, wow, what the hell is going on now? What am I supposed to do now? It's a strange feeling.
That's interesting. Yeah. I suppose there are no studies done on that. This episode was sponsored by BioOptimizers. The folks at BioOptimizers have done it again. They've just released their new formula for Magnesium Breakthrough, the most potent magnesium supplement on the market. If you struggle with anxiety, depression, have trouble sleeping, or are just overworked and stressed, try magnesium. Even before you try meditation, maybe. It's much faster. You can always go back to meditation. Seriously, though, about 50% of Americans are magnesium deficient, which is crazy because it helps with all sorts of things from diabetes, muscle relaxation and blood pressure to metabolism and digestion. There's a reason it's called our body's master mineral. The problem is most supplements are synthetic or only have a couple of types of magnesium. And let's be honest, how many of us know the difference between magnesium taurate and malate? Magnesium Breakthrough by BioOptimizers has all 7 organic forms plus cofactors to increase absorption, ensuring stress relief and high cognitive performance. Many of their customers immediately notice the effects. Be in charge of your well-being, take one before bed every night, and see how you feel in the morning. BioOptimizers even has an exclusive offer to get you started. Visit magbreakthrough.com/Peterson or use code Peterson at checkout for 10% off. It's also a great gift. magbreakthrough.com/Peterson. Okay. Next subject, Elon Musk buying Twitter. How do you feel about that?
Oh, we could get really into this one. I mean, you responded to my Instagram story the other day. That was about Dr. Oz, which we could get into as well. But I was talking about
Dr. Oz.
I know you like Dr. Oz. I don't agree with that. I think Dr. Oz is bad for America. In terms of the Elon Musk stuff, Elon Musk, I'm not much of a fan of. I think that
are you like that kid at school that didn't like Harry Potter? Cause they're like, yeah, I don't like Harry Potter. Like, yeah, you do. Everyone likes Harry Potter.
I also didn't like Harry Potter. Harry Potter is for women and children. Lord of the Rings is for men. I watched Lord of the Rings and read Lord of the Rings. That was my thing. But
did you like Game of Thrones?
Not as much as Lord of the Rings, but I did. I read all the books and watched the show, and then they ruined the show. I mean, just terrible. Game of Thrones was great.
Yeah. The books were so much better. You know what pissed me off about Game of Thrones? And then we'll get back to Elon.
Okay.
I'm just going to say this. This isn't nice, but Sansa should have been hotter in the show. Like, they make this huge thing about how perfect she is in the show. That made me mad.
I agree. She wasn't the most attractive person. Didn't she date Harry Styles, the lady? Or who did she date? The actress? No, I forget. Anyway.
One of the brothers. There was like a band, a couple of brothers. Wow, yeah, no, I'm not that up to date.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, yeah, she wasn't the best looking. I mean, Daenerys was obviously the best
looking. Yeah.
And then Robb Stark's wife before he got stabbed. She was beautiful as well.
Yeah.
She should have had her be Sansa. Except I guess she wouldn't fit with the description.
Yeah.
But they did wigs for everyone else.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. No, okay. It was a very important conversation from a show that ended like 4 years ago.
I'm rewatching it. It's still really good.
Are you? I want to rewatch it. I would love to do that. Yeah. Rewatch The Lord of the Rings about every 3 months. So I should get on Game of Thrones as well and do it.
Wow. Every 3 months? Jordan made me, my fiance, he made me watch Lord of the Rings. Like the first week we met, I think it was a test. It was like, will she do it? Like all the movies, which I did. It was like,
extended
this is
edition?
Like, honestly, yeah.
Great.
Extended edition.
You have a good fiance TV. Then.
Yeah, it's a good show. But there's definitely like, I definitely think it appeals more to men. And I have a pretty masculine right. personality. And I was still like, some of these scenes, like they go on, they just go on. And there's a lot of emotion there too. There was like, why is there so much emotion in the scene and who is it appealing to? Like not, there's not a motherly instinct, I don't think.
No.
So it must be appealing to emotions in men, which is weird.
Right. It's like when Sam is going, I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you. And he puts Frodo on his back and he takes him up to Mount Doom. I mean, that's like, that's you're thinking of your best friend, your brother. I mean, it's truly powerful stuff. It's really the most incredible. Man, anyway, okay, we don't have to get into this whole Lord of the Rings. I could talk about Lord of the Rings. I've made plenty of videos all about the Lord of the Rings, about Tolkien, about what they're doing with the new Amazon show. Plenty of stuff.
Anyway, Elon.
Okay, we'll go back to Elon Musk, okay? It's a very loose podcast, which I like. It's interesting that way. Elon Musk. I'm not a fan of Elon Musk for very legitimate reasons. I am not a fan of the technocratic agenda of many of the people who are in charge of this country and in charge of really the world right now. Elon Musk comes out and says, you know, I support the Canadian truckers, yet he's developing technology that makes self-driving cars. I am against self-driving cars. Just because we can have the technology to do something doesn't mean that it's a good idea. Truck drivers are the number one job here in the States, basically, the most employed job, and you're going to get rid of those for self-driving people. What are you going to do? Hollow out the entire middle class of this country by doing that? The middle of America? You know, there's the stuff with the Neuralink and the brain chips and improving humanity. I just think there are too many problems with Elon Musk as a guy. He also has ties to the CCP and many investments there. You know, I love what he's doing with Twitter. I think that if he can make it a free speech platform for all, that's a great thing. And I'm not going to knock him for it, but I'm not going to be this person who comes and just stands with Elon Musk through everything because he said some funny jokes about Elizabeth Warren. It's like that. I don't really care. I care about what's actually getting done and what's happening in the future. That's what means the most to me.
I just like Elon's Twitter.
Right, no, he has some funny tweets.
I want to be able to answer emails on my phone while I'm driving. That's high on my priority list. I want that.
I get that. But, you know, then you have self-driving cars. And now in Europe, they're just putting forward these things in cars that are saying, okay, if you get to a certain speed limit, then we can shut you down. Right? That your car can't go past a certain speed limit.
That was bound to happen.
Yeah. And so then it's like a certain speed limit. And then they say, okay, actually, you've used too much carbon this month driving, so you can't drive anymore.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So it's like all these things go together. And so this type of agenda of this technological revolution, I think is truly probably the biggest issue for humanity. It's not an American or a left versus right issue. It's a humanitarian issue.
Oh, I didn't hear about that European car thing. I wonder if my dad knows about that. I'm going to call him and tell him after this podcast.
Yeah, you should ask him. Yeah, it's really terrible. And these things slither in and they always use it under the guise of, oh, technology is just making everyone's life better, helping people. And then you think about people in this country and everyone's so nihilistic. You don't have to go meet people anymore. You can swipe right for them on Tinder. You don't have to cook. You can order your food. Everyone can be an Uber driver and girls can be OnlyFans models. And that's how you make money. I mean, I think the technological revolution has been detrimental in a lot of ways to America and the West in general. I mean, even capitalism in a sense, you know, as a conservative, we talk about free markets all the time, but you can't help but say the free markets and the Industrial Revolution drove it so that people no longer had to put families first like they used to in this country and across the West. So there's a lot of problems with this, but I don't think a lot of people are waking up to it.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Here's a question. So you're a conservative dude, your mm-hmm. fiance is a conservative woman. What's your opinion on her role when you guys start having kids? Because she has a social media following of her own.
Yeah. No, I think that a lot of that, we've talked about it before and been like, okay, what do you want to do when we have kids? And you're looking forward to that. Do you want to stay home or what do you want to do? As I said before about her, she is the most incredible woman I've ever met. She transcends what other women are like. She transcends what most men are like in the way that she thinks about ideas of the world and of politics, and not just politics, but culture and humanity and history, art. I mean, she's so incredible. What I would say, and I hope this doesn't sound simpy, I'm trying, this is really true, I truly believe this, is that it would be doing the world a disservice if she wasn't out there saying things, if she wasn't speaking her mind, because she's so good. And so I think that when it comes to having children, I think that obviously she will need to prioritize that. That will be a priority, and she will love those children. And of course I will too, but you know, as the mother, she will have a different role. But I think denying the world her thoughts and opinions and the things she knows would be a disservice to everyone else in the world. So I think she has to be able to do enough of both, be able to manage it while not sacrificing the children for it.
That was so nice. That was pretty nice. That was really nice to hear. I've talked to I talked to a lot of people, and I've talked to some, I wouldn't even say conservative men, more like the red pill community men, where they're like women, you know, women stay home. And I know a lot of women who actually like enjoy, my best friend is having the time of her life with a little kid. My sister-in-law, same thing. She just had a little baby. She's having the time of her life, although she works as well. But like, and then me, and I think it's my, and I honestly think it's my personality, because I'm driven in a way that I know a lot of my friends aren't. If I change, like when I have more kids, because I would really like more kids, if I stayed home and didn't work, I would go crazy and it would be not good for anybody. Like I'm not able to do it. And I've figured out that I'm able to have a kid, spend really quality time with that kid. It's different when they're really little. Like if they're under a year old, they're kind of glued to you and that's that. But after that, I think depending on what type of woman you are, there is a way to balance it so that you're able to work and fulfill one side of yourself that maybe not everybody has, and also have kids. And I think it's important to talk about, because I think a lot of women don't have kids. A lot of women who are more driven don't have children because they're like, well, I'm not going to be able to do it. Right. And I think that that's just a lie, that there is a way to do both. It's tricky, and it's going to be trickier, I think, for a woman than for a man, because you're female. That's just like how the world is. But I think it's doable. It's good that you guys have talked about that.
Yeah. I think that if you're going to do both, you will have to end up sacrificing parts of each. That's just, obviously, you only have a finite amount of time every single day. You have to sacrifice a part of each. I mean, I know plenty of women who are conservative, and they also have jobs and also provide for their kids. And you can see some of them have sacrificed their kids for their career and the things that they're doing. And it's like, if that's what you want to do, I guess I get it. But, you know, throughout history, I mean, there have been women who have gone to work throughout history. This isn't just a totally nuanced thing where women have stayed home forever. But I think that women should be prioritizing kids over the career. If you're saying that you are splitting it up and saying, okay, I'm going to do 50-50, that is only 50% of the time that your kid is getting with you. And I think that studies show in basically every category that if you want to have good kids with good values, that you should spend more time with them. And that's also a dad thing. Dad should come home from work and at least spend time with their kids, not just go up and go to sleep or watch TV. So it's a tied together thing. Both of them have to put in the work for their kids. I mean, this is why I talk to so many parents, conservative parents, who say, yeah, my kids, now they're horrible leftists, they're communists, socialists, they shave their head or whatever. And that's partly your fault. That's your fault for not taking enough interest in your child. You didn't have dinner with them. You didn't sit down and talk to them about your values. You didn't take them to church. That's your fault. If you want them to be good, you make them good yourself.
Yeah. And be careful about what school you put them in, right? Yeah. If you're like, oh, I don't like what that school's teaching my kids, I don't like their teacher. That teacher is teaching your kids for like, what is it? 9 to 3, five days a week. And you don't like that. And you literally have an option here. It's like, oh no, it's the closest school and I don't have enough money, so it needs to be a public school. Find a different one. Although, to be fair, public schools, it's tricky. Like you said, it's very tricky. So there's actually a massive problem there, and not everybody can homeschool. So no, it's tricky. But I mean, I didn't grow up now. Nowadays it's worse. But I remember my dad took me out of class. I don't even remember why, because I was little. I was in grade like 2, 3, and 4. And he'd be like, oh, you're staying home this week. I was like, why am I staying home this week? But like, sweet, I'm staying home this week. And I later found out those were the more like the politically correct weeks, where guest speakers would come in and teach you about, I think it was mostly like relationships in a politically correct way. And my dad, like from the early age, was just like, nah, staying home this week. Like, so I feel like there are kind of things you can dodge, although it's pretty intertwined in how people are schooled now. So maybe I'm not being sympathetic enough to people. But I feel like if you have a strong, like, if you're at home and you talk to your kids and you have dinner and you explain these things and you say, yeah, you know, some of the things you're going to be taught aren't true. I've already told Scarlett that when she comes home, she's like, is this true? I'm like, no. Well, so-and-so said it was true. Well, people lie.
Yeah.
You have to think, yeah.
The kids aren't going to know anything that isn't told to them. And so I just find it funny that all these people come and talk about indoctrination and they say, oh, you want to homeschool your kids or you want to make your kid a Christian. You want to indoctrinate them with those values. And it's like, in a way, yes. I mean, not indoctrinate, but I want to give my kids these values. I don't care about what you think about me, leftist. I want to push these values on my kids to make them good people. And then if you send them to public school, then they're just indoctrinated by the government. So would I rather have them be indoctrinated by me or indoctrinated by you, teacher, who has a transition closet? It seems pretty obvious, but they don't want you to have... I mean, there are many people on the left who don't want you to even have ownership of your kids. Some of this radical wing of the left, they want to say, oh, the government basically owns your kids. You send them to school, the parents don't get any say, and now you're our kid.
That's nuts. That's got to be like, it's that transition closet you mentioned. Like, I know that there are these TikToks that go viral that show some of these awful things, but how frequent do you think that kind of thing is? Like, that's got to be more on the rare side, don't you think?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you hear something like that, and obviously this isn't in every single classroom. There's no doubt that this is an instance that has been showcased and it's blowing up on social media and people are amplifying it. But what you will see is that there are so many examples of people who want this taught. I mean, when you look at the polling, when you look at all these pictures of teachers, when you look at the amount of people who got mad at the Don't Say Gay bill in Florida, there's plenty of people who are for this leftist agenda in the schools. Not all of them are as radical. Not all of them are coming out to their kids as Zazer and trying to push them into some ideology. Some of them just are teaching a little bit better, of course. But there are many people. And if you think about it, let's say that transition closet is just in one classroom. Well, that's still one person's kid. That's still one person's kid that could be getting indoctrinated or being groomed by a teacher. In many places, I think these are sexual predators. I think that it just needs to be banned nationwide, this type of behavior, this type of education, because it's not for children and it's ruining some kids' lives.
Yeah, 100%. I'm 100% with you. Like, I don't know if I mean, I'm probably conservative. I've always identified as a libertarian, never identified as a conservative. It's like, no, yeah. I'm like, I don't really care. As long as everybody leaves me alone, I don't really care what goes on out there. But what's going on in schools and like hormone replacement therapy for kids, that is completely unforgivable.
Of course. And that's why you should hate Dr. Oz, because Dr. Oz pushed for hormone blockers on kids.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Uh-huh. Dr. Oz is
when?
I'd have to look it up, but it was a whole thing.
I don't
about
believe
him pushing
it.
Puberty blockers on kids. I swear. You got to look this up. Look
it
up.
You know how much fake news there is about Dr. Oz? You know how much fake news there is about him?
No, of course. There's
people
fake news about me.
People use his face all the time.
Right. No, I understand, but I would recommend that you look this up. Anyone who's listening, look up Dr. Oz and the puberty blockers. Look up Dr. Oz being tied to the World Economic Forum. Dr. Oz not even living in the state of Pennsylvania that he lives in.
Yeah, no way. Really. That sounds like conservative nonsense, Will. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. MAGA nonsense.
Sorry. It was my asthma from this horrible state I live in. I moved to Tennessee in September and I was like, Tennessee, land of the free, beautiful, wonderful, amazing place. And then the trees got me and I've been like chronically ill for 8 months because I'm allergic to everything and the trees here bloom all the time. So I'm moving to Miami.
That's good. Yeah. Palm trees, they don't have that same effect.
No, they don't. And it's sunny there. Yeah. They've introduced this new bill, which sounds nice.
Yes. No, you're going to have a great time with your kids in Florida.
Yeah. Yay.
No. We could go back to the libertarian thing, if you wanted to talk about that, because I'm very not libertarian.
Okay. Okay. Why? Because you think you have a duty to change. I mean, that's fair too. I understand that.
Yeah.
Why do you not like libertarianism?
So think about the far left in itself, right? You think about people who are communists, you think about the ideology of Marxism, and all of these ideologies work through force. They have to have a revolution, a cultural revolution, maybe a violent revolution, whatever it is, to get what they want. They have to have a revolution. They have to take something over. They have to convince a class that they are lower so that they can come and rise up. When you have libertarians, then you now have a people who say, leave me alone, against an ideology that says, we're going to take over. And so that is why I think that America is the way that it is, because we've basically had libertarian, like liberal and libertarian people versus the left. And the left doesn't take no for an answer, where libertarians just say, okay, I'll just leave it alone. And so when you have real conservatism, or at least an ideology that prioritizes families and that sort of sense, then you actually have people pushing back. That's why people like DeSantis now. That's why a lot of real conservatives like DeSantis. That's why people like the country of Hungary. Because they're not like this just, oh, free market, like live and let live type of deal. They say, no, we are going to do things that are going to actually benefit our people. We're going to be on the aggressive. We are going to attack instead of just the live and let live type of. And I don't mean to attack you or anything for being a libertarian.
No,
it's just
go for it.
My thoughts about libertarianism. That ideology has made it so that now we have these transit, because we just looked at a thing today from the Washington Post. In 2017, they were talking about Confederate statues being bad, but the founding fathers good. And you go through all the different timeline, and now in 2022, they're coming out and saying, let's change the name of George Washington University. And it's like, that's how their ideology works. This is Washington Post saying, let's change George Washington University. But that's how their ideology works, because it has to make people believe that there is a revolution that has to be taken over for anything to be changed. Whereas people who say, no, let's just make it as free as possible, individualism, will always get ran over by the people who say we need a revolution.
Okay. I can get behind part of that. And I agree with part of that at this point. And part of the reason I built a podcast and I have certain guests on is because I'm trying to push back against it. I completely agree. It's gone too far. I was pretty disagreeable. Like, I was arguing about feminism, you know, in grade 9, mm-hmm. before it was cool.
Yeah.
I think the part of conservatism that didn't appeal to me was, there were elements of it that I just wasn't interested in. Like, let's say back in 2013, when conservatism was more conservative than it is now, because it's moved over. I was always, you know, pro make drugs legal type of thing. Which I think a normal conservative would say, no, there needs to be, like, ban those. But guns are okay. And I was like, well, guns are also okay. But like, drugs are okay. And I think I'm just okay with more things. But the fight element, I definitely agree with you. Like, what, yeah. I left Canada. I talked about how the way COVID was handled was ridiculous. I started talking about that, I think, in June, the first time, right before I got COVID the first time. Like, right away, I was like, if you can't shut things down, though, they can't do that. Like, that's not going to go well. But I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I don't know where I stand at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, just an example of, like, imagine someone says, okay, you have to go fight someone to the death, but you can only use knives. And so both of you walk into the room, you have a knife, and then the person who you're fighting brought a gun. And you say, hey, ref, that's unfair. This person brought a gun. And you're yelling about how unfair it is, at the same time they shoot you and they win the fight. So we can yell about how, like, unfair things are and say, you know, we just want to be left alone and follow the rules and be like this. But these people, again and again, will take advantage, and they don't live by the same rules that you and I live by. So that's why we have to be on the aggressive and say that, you know, like it's about talking about the drugs and the guns and things. It's like, you know, when you allow behavior that is bad for people in a society, and this is, people are probably going to think I sound fairly authoritarian, but when you allow degeneracy in some societies and you allow them to run rampant, as they kind of have in America and the West in many ways, then you will have a society that, even if they're left alone in their own homes, it bleeds out into the rest of the world. And so that's really what we've got in the West today, is that you let people do all these things and say it's all okay, and then it bleeds out everywhere else. And now, again, you have this stuff with the kids, and it's really disgusting.
What are your plans for the next year? Do you have anything up and coming? Are you just working on your online platform? Are you writing anything? What are your goals?
Working on my next book, actually, is my biggest goal. And that's been a challenge, because this next book is, it's not even like a conservative book, the way that I'm trying to frame it. It's a very like us versus them type of book, elites Ooh. Versus us. And so it's been hard to find people who want to support that type of message, I will say, even after how well my last book did. And so that's been difficult, but really hammering in on that and trying to get signed there is really what I'm looking at for this year. And I think that I say this first because I think that this book, especially for the audience I have, which is many people who are younger, who probably haven't heard a lot of this stuff before, is going to be a really changing book for this country.
Mm, wow. How yeah. old is your audience on average?
Yeah, I think I have about 50% of my audience that's under 34. And so the rest okay. is older than that. So yeah, so it's a pretty good amount of people who are actually pretty young. And when you look at conservative politics in general, yeah. you know, it's definitely not that young. So for me to have an audience of that age is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
You know, that's and fun. I hate that just like, oh, you're making things for young people. Like that's what you're doing. You know, I don't really like that. I'm just glad that young people are actually coming around to understand some of the things that we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Okay. I didn't ask anything on my giant list of questions.
I know. You guys sent us the topics and I didn't get any of the
Oh yeah, I know. Sorry. I
was just like, yeah,
who's your fiance and why don't you like Dr. Oz and what's right. wrong with Elon Musk? And uh-huh. I still can't believe you didn't like Harry Potter though. That's not cool. Harry Potter was amazing. The story was amazing. And I swear they're a Christian. Were you one of those people who were like, Harry Potter's evil because there are witches in it?
No. Listen, I grew up an atheist okay. my entire life.
Okay, so okay. I just checking.
If I would have thought Harry Potter had gotten it, then I probably would have disliked it even more at the time when it was coming out. So.
Oh, okay. Then let's do this. And we can like close off with this. How did you switch from atheism to being a Christian? What happened?
It was during COVID. And when you're in the conservative space, there's so many people who are Christian, many of them fake Christians, just going to be honest with you, at least in the leadership positions. And so I was someone who kind of considered myself a fake Christian a little bit. And, you know, I was saying that I was kind of religious, but wasn't really doing anything. And so when COVID hit, I was home alone. I decided to order the Quran and then order the Bible to read both. And so I ended up reading the Bible and I read the four Gospels. And it's really like with anything that when you get any sort of type of information presented to you, and you either have to make a choice. You either ignore the information, you accept it as truth, or you think that it's false. And so what I did after I read it, I said, okay, I think that this is true and I'm going to change my life because of it. And I decided to get baptized. That was about a year ago. A year and a couple months ago, I got baptized in Hermosa Beach, California by Pastor Jack Hibbs. And it was one of the greatest decisions I ever made was to do that. You know, your life gets harder doing that, but it's well worth it.
So what changed?
Well, it's, you know, I think a lot of people still expect that Christianity is supposed to make your life better in some ways. You know, the life that you're living now while you're here on this earth in your physical body, that it's supposed to make your life better because now you believe in God and he's going to come and he's going to answer your prayers and he's going to make it better. But in a lot of ways, your life gets harder because now essentially you're living by certain tenets from the Bible, from scripture that are different than the way you were living before. And to live up to those standards is actually more difficult. And so your life doesn't actually get easier. And, you know, being someone who believes in something strongly that other people actually don't really believe in, and being kind of in some ways against the world hates you for what you believe in, it makes your life harder, you know, especially if you're a strong Christian like I am, and or my fiance is, or any of the other strong religious people who really get down to it. People will hate you for what you believe in. They will hate you for the values. I mean, they are hating people who are pro-life right now that you'll see. I mean, going and protesting out of justices' houses and screaming at them, intimidating judges, breaking federal code. I mean, that's what happens when you stand up for life and when you stand up for things that are biblically sound. So it gets tougher, but the payoff, I believe, is much better.
I'd say you're saved. Seems like a pretty good payoff.
Yeah, exactly. That's there's nothing better than that. You know, if Jesus died for your sins on the cross and you read the four Gospels and you believe that, then you really have no other choice but to give your life to him. And so that's what I did.
Wow. So that was over COVID. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Do you think there's a resurgence in Christianity? And do you think part of that is because of, you know, the chaos that we're seeing out there?
Oh, definitely. 100%. All young people that you talk to nowadays are incredibly nihilist. Most of them think that there is no purpose in life. Everything is meaningless and they don't really want to do anything. They have no passion or drive. They move to some urban city and again, become an Uber driver, a girl on OnlyFans, or they work for some big mega corporation that's owned by a bigger mega corporation and there's no passion there. And so everyone feels pretty down about their lives. And so they need some sort of meaning in their lives. And so really they choose either leftism and Marxism and the communism and all these social justice stuff, they choose that, or they choose Christianity. And this is why I think Christianity is actually very tied to conservatism. But they choose Christianity because it gives their life meaning. Just like that is a religion, the leftism is also a religion in exactly the same way. People are naturally religious. You know, they have been for thousands and thousands of years. You know, you used to have weather gods and then the Greek gods, all these sorts of things. And then you get Christianity and Islam and all of that. People are naturally religious, so they will be inclined to go towards something. And right now, the biggest religion is leftism. But many people are seeing a resurgence in Christianity because of that. And then also many of the churches in America, at least, that have been these evangelical churches that have preached this feel-good Christianity, life is not supposed to be hard, come in and get your free coffee, that type of Christianity, are failing because people want the real, give it to me straight, type of Christianity or Catholicism. And so I think there's a resurgence and actually a strong Christian faith in this country. I hope it's enough.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I have no idea. Things are pretty crazy. Are you a Protestant or practicing Catholicism?
No, not practicing Catholicism. So pretty much just non-denominational.
Non-denominational. Okay.
Yeah, so I guess you could say Protestant. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I still want to get you and your dad on PragerU for a documentary about masculinity.
That's still doable.
Yeah.
We'll set that up. We'll talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should do it. We should do it.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to find you, where should they go if they don't follow you already?
You can go anywhere on social media at The Will Witt, and you can order my book, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere really books are sold.
Okay, thank you very much for coming on. I'll have you and your fiance on, or potentially wife on, when I have a studio in Miami.
Let's hope wife. We can cross our fingers.
Yeah, definitely.